Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight podcast number 151. We're recording on Friday, the 28th of January, 2011, and hopefully you're listening to it on that same day. We wanted to get our thoughts out nice and quickly on Nokia's quarter four 2010 results. Pretty controversial, judging from the sheer number of comments we saw on the site. With me today, I have, as always, in Sussex,
Rafe Blanford.
And up in Edinburgh,
Ewan Spence.
And in Hull,
Davey Gilson. Hello.
There we have the full team with us. We'll try and get through a few other news stories first, and then just a little teaser, and then get on to the quarter four results discussion, which will form the main portion of this podcast, I suspect. But first, Nokia Reader has come out, Rafe.
Yes, that's right. This is a RSS reader, sort of a simple and, I would say, relatively basic RSS reader. It's come out of Nokia Beta Labs. I was quite impressed by the performance of this, but in terms of functionality, you know, it's been kept fairly simple, and I think that's a pretty deliberate choice. But it's a very interesting way to keep up with just, you know, a handful of feeds on your device on the move and get notified about them. It's actually been developed using a combination of Qt and some other technologies. And for me, what stood out particularly was kind of the slickness of the implementation, you know, in terms of expanding transitions and the way it integrated with the browser in a pretty speedy manner. But I think the most interesting thing about this was actually it's using the new Nokia Notifications API. And basically this is like notifications on other platforms. This is a system intended to sort of save battery life when you're dealing with some kind of connected application. As an introduction, I guess I should say that whenever you're making a data connection on a smartphone, that's a relatively power-intensive process, so anything you can do to minimise that is a good thing. And what notification systems do in general is they have a shared persistent connection, and it's very similar to the way push email works, and they will register with a server out on the internet for whatever's coming into the phone, and equally, obviously, from the phone the other way round. And everything will be channeled through that single persistent connection, thus is essentially minimising the number of connections that your smartphone has to keep going at any one time, and there can be a certain amount of intelligence on the server about when to send these things. Of course, for something like an RSS reader, having this as a notification system is also good, because it means you get instantly updated about an incoming news item or incoming RSS item. By contrast, traditional RSS readers work by putting everything down every 15 minutes, and clearly that's not only uses more data, it isn't always instant. With push notifications, you can get instant notification when something's updated, and this is partly in this case because Nokia have combined the notifications technology with something called PubSub Hub Hub, which basically takes RSS technology and adds a push element to that as well. So I was pretty impressed to see, you know, push notifications come in pretty instantly. Actually, it was faster in terms of updates than some of my feeds in Google Reader. Now, as I say, this is a relatively limited application. I'm sure people who've tried this are thinking about, well, I'd like to have OPML import or some kind of synchronization or connection with Google Reader or whatever your RSS client of choice is. That may well come in the future, but this was branded an experimental prototype by Beta Labs, and as right. I say, really it's to act as a demonstrator of this notifications API, which I'm sure is something we'll be hearing a lot more about, because there's always this power and energy constraint issue on mobile phones. And this is an API that's available for any third-party developer to use, and people can find more details of it on forumnokia.com. So I would say if you're a developer who's using these kind of connections, and it can be for, you know, instant messaging, or it could be for in-game updates, or anything where you're pushing, you know, a message of some kind to the user, you know, check it out, because your users will thank you for it.
Yeah, do see the story on allaboutsymbian.com, where Rafe has got screenshots, other thoughts, and of course links where necessary. Also new this week was a big update to Nokia Social. Now, I've been ranting about this for a while, in that Nokia implemented their new Twitter and Facebook social networking system all in web runtime, and it was all rather slow and clunky. And they had an update, I think, in December, which improved it slightly. But this was the big one. This was the one where they improved performance significantly, the one where they increased the image size you could upload. Previously, you'd upload your 12-megapixel epic, and it would come out 800 pixels by 400 or whatever. And now you can upload full 12-megapixel images, and we're supported on the appropriate service. TwitPic gives the full size. I think Facebook might scale it down slightly. And you can basically let your friends see the full majesty of the photographs you capture. There's better contacts application integration. You can now see the latest tweet or Facebook status update actually embedded in the contact entry in contact, which is a great, great move. And within the social networking side, you can actually see with a little icon which of your social contacts have an appropriate entry back in your main phone contact. So I think it's been very nicely done. I was tremendously impressed. Now, previously, when I've gone into social networking on my Nokia N8, for example, I thought, I've used it for a couple of minutes and thought, blow this for a game of soldiers, and I boot up Gravity. I have found over the last week, I've been booting this up and browsing through it, and after a minute or two, I think, this is not bad. I'm able to do everything I want to do in terms of keeping up with my Twitter and Facebook contacts. I'm able to retweet, I'm able to reply, and yes, it's not quite as slick as Gravity, but for the vast majority of people, they're going to think this is the best thing since sliced bread. So kudos to Nokia's teams. They've pulled out the last ounce of performance out of the Nokia social networking, out of web runtime. Maybe it'll get tweaked further with the new firmware. Maybe it won't. But either way, it's a big, big update and highly recommended. Rafe, there were a few people who had problems updating this. Did we ever get to the bottom of that?
Well, I'm not sure why it was happening, but the sort of solution to it was rather convoluted, which was to remove social networking and then install the different versions one by one via sys files. There may be now some updates on the sort of discussion forum about this, but I haven't come across them. It does appear to be happening more with operator-branded handsets, and even then it seems to be a minority. Some people are saying it works fine for them, others are not. As always, you tend to get the people who are having problems commenting the loudest, but it is obviously a sign that, you know, this update process is never 100%, and, you know, it's something you need to continue to work on. But I would agree with you, this was a pretty significant update and a good move. I was also glad to see the sort of synchronization, or rather the integration with contact, starting to work a bit better, and that's partly about displaying the status information within the address book, which is quite interesting because when you then go into it to make a phone call, you can often see the most recent status update, which has a certain amount of value. But it was also in terms of they are now displaying more obviously whether a contact is linked in social networking, which makes it easier to see which ones you might want to add. There's still an argument to be made that you could have some kind of automatic process to do that and to drag down all the, you know, Facebook icons so you update your address book. I'm sort of in two minds about that kind of wizard process and adding everybody. To a certain extent, being able to pick and choose which contacts you want to see is no bad thing, but, you know, clearly that does depend on, you know, how much your life or your contact list revolves around Facebook, and obviously that varies from person to person. If people are interested in that kind of thing, there is Socially, which is a third-party application which allows for more of that kind of thing. In general, I'd agree with you on the performance front, certainly an improvement. I was quite impressed for what is effectively a web runtime-based application with extras along the side. You know, it was pretty good. Essentially, you're still going to be limited by the fact you're operating over a data connection for much of the information coming down, and so if you're on 2G, you'll be pretty slow. On 3G or Wi-Fi, you should be okay. Looking to the future with this is obviously an application that is asking to be ported to Qt and have a UI perhaps designed in QML, and also will benefit from an updated web browser, because that will update the sort of the web core for web runtime as well. But under the sort of current circumstances, I think it's probably as good as it will get in performance terms. Never say never, of course, but I'm pretty sure we can be confident, given the importance of social networking, this will continue to evolve, as indeed the sort of social team said on the Ovi blog when they announced this. There's more to come in 2011, so we'll be watching this space very carefully.
What's nice to see in both in the Nokia Social and also in Nokia Reader is these aren't tools that are designed for the cutting-edge power users, people who are squeezing every single ounce of performance out of their phone. There are more advanced applications. We've already mentioned Gravity. These are for everybody else. I mean, we're going to talk about the number of Nokia N8 devices and Symbian 3 devices that were sold in the results as we come up to them in the podcast. But, you know, not all of those people need every single tiny measurement of Twitter. They need an application that's a little bit more than good enough, because they get to good enough, they know the application to do a little bit more. It doesn't need to have that last 5 or 10% of power. And both Reader and Social are doing that. They're giving exactly what the mass market want. It's not the mass market that write up the blogs and the reviews, but it's them that will be using it. And that's why I think these are really important. Nokia Nokia are designing towards the people who are using their phone, not the people who are reviewing their phones.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on. David, I have to ask you a question. Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you angry? And what music are you listening to? If that's not a lead into a short review summary, I don't know what is.
Thanks, Steve. Yes, oh, I'm all of the above. yeah, what I've reviewed this week on All About Symbian is an application called Mood Agent, which for me is a great little application which solves an age-old problem. That being creating playlists out of my music collection. Maybe I'm lazy, but I've always found making playlists quite a chore, and it's something I've never really done, so I've not been able to maybe get the best out of my music collection, but I could. What Mood Agent does is scans all the music you have on your phone and synchronizes this with the Mood Agent's servers, and it will dynamically create a playlist for you based on your mood, and how you tell it what mood you're in or what mood you'd like to be in is by adjusting certain bars in the user interface. You have, let's see, sensual, tender, happy, angry, and tempo, and you adjust these to different combinations, and you get a different playlist every time. And actually, you can even get a different playlist for the same combination of bars. So I think there is some random selection going on as well. But it works very well. It has surprised me a few times with what it'll throw up, but it's never played anything which I thought was out of place. Things that I would like to see in the future with it is it doesn't integrate with a built-in music application, and it doesn't have its own home screen widget, so you have to go back into the application to pause it or to skip a track. And would like to see something based on home screen, and also it'd be nice if there was some integration with Last.fm. But overall, I think it's a great way just to quickly get a playlist together for the sort of music that you're in the mood for hearing.
And do any of the moods you dial in, David, do any of them come up with Severed Fifth as a choice?
Yes, they do sometimes. so I think you have to bump up Angry and Tempo for that.
And do any of them bring up the Brotherhood of Man?
I am afraid I don't have any of that.
Sacrilege.
I think we should get Ewan doing a secondary review on Mood Agent, just see if he can catch it out. That'll make an interesting point. Ewan, while you're there, the C503, we just had this in for review, I gather. Is that arrived yet? And basically, what is it? Would you like to trail your review?
No, I'm watching at the window for the DHL man at this very moment. Okay. But it is due. We've seen the paperwork and everything. And Nokia C503 is going to be looked at over the next week or two. Yet again, it's one of these small, cheaper handsets. I think it's going for about 170, 180 euros at the price of launch. 3.2-inch screen. It's running Symbian S60 V5. And I think a lot of people are going to look at this and go, well, hold on, isn't there a new operating system out there? Why isn't it using Symbian 3? Well, for a lot of reasons, but I think the main one is cost, and it cost in build materials. The older platform uses less stuff, for want of a better word. It doesn't need the extra graphics chip and everything. It doesn't need the extra space of memory. This is essentially an update at the sort of end of line of the 5800, but it's hitting there right into the budget market. It's got a whole bundle of stuff. It's still got the Wi-Fi. It's still got the 3G. It's still eminently capable, but I think a lot of people are going to look at this as a sort of poor man's C6 when it's not. In actual fact, this is, again, it's targeting a very specific part of the market that's looking for a touchscreen, that's looking for a very good price in it, that has a great big average revenue per user in terms of data usage for the networks. And I think it's going to be quite a popular phone. I think if a network adopts this and puts it in as its sort of entry-level touchscreen, it will do very well. Which markets take it up, that's going to be a little bit more interesting.
Yes, I think you're spot on there, Ewan. I mean, with the way that the industry works, clearly it's not always going to be possible to put the latest chipsets into the cheaper phones. I think this is a problem that is faced by all the platforms to a certain extent. You know, we've seen the capabilities of some of the, you know, lower cost Android devices don't match up to those of Hub, and the same thing's happening here. So Symbian One devices will be around for a little while, and indeed, you know, the idea with Qt being backported to them in the smart installer is that shouldn't be a problem from an app point of view. I think it's equally fair to say the experience isn't as good as you're getting on the Symbian 3 devices because of the significant updates that came with Symbian 3. But it's also worth remembering that not everyone needs a smartphone at the high end. A lot of people are interested in lower cost devices but still want a lot of the functionality. And being able to provide that same functionality at a lower cost is clearly a desirable thing. In the case of the C503 here, you're really looking at back on the old generation processors as we think of them now, but other than that, you know, it's quite an attractive device. You know, Nokia, which I guess we'll talk about in a minute, have sold a lot of smartphones in 2010, and an awful lot of those were the Nokia 5230, which was very much a cut down, a basic phone. The C503 is actually, you know, pitched slightly higher than that. In fact, in one sense, I would describe the C503 as a 5230 for the more mature markets. It has the 3G, the Wi-Fi, the GPS that you were talking about, and so it's just a cut above. In terms of design, I've only very briefly had my hands on one of these, and yes, unsurprising, it's dominated by plastics, but it loses some of the rather ugly rim that you get on the 5230 and the 5800 and some of those other variants, and instead it's sort of everything's flush, and so it feels a bit more comfortable in the hand. I was actually surprised by how light it was, and it's also got this sort of dual tone color scheme, sort of black generally with a color, and so they're rather attractive. They stand out, you know, maybe a bit more stylish or fashionable than sort of the 5230, which much of the time has been sort of in greys or blacks or single colors. And so the design for me at least, you know, stood out from the rest. So it'll be interesting to see what Yoon comes up with. And I know some people are just going to ignore this totally because they're only interested in the higher end devices. But I think it's worth remembering that it's actually these lower end devices, you know, that fit very much into the mid tier by volume sell far more. And, you know, are just as important, if not more so, arguably, when developers are thinking about who to target or service providers want to, you know, make their resource available, because that bigger target audience is a bigger revenue pool potentially to draw from. Now clearly they may use these services less, but that volume I think easily offsets that.
Yeah, and certainly, and I think we're almost bleeding into sort of the results discussion now, is that yes, you can get lots of kudos when you have a high-end device that goes to, you know, that gives you quite a large margin in the build cost. And a lot of people think are going to look at devices like the C503 and look back historically at the 5230 and go, oh, so Nokia had to make more devices, they made less profit per handset to get roughly the same amount of profit, give or take your percentage points, however you want to do the finances. So they're running harder to do the same thing. But that's quite a short-term view. I mean, the view here is that if you're looking at it long, and I think very long in terms of the smartphone platform, you want volume. You want to get, you want to keep the market share up. You want to get as many people as possible into the system. Betamax was a much better video system. It's still, you still used professionally until about 2 or 3 years ago in Betacam and Betacam Pro. But at the same time, they didn't license it. So Sony kept it quite high end. JVC and VHS went out to the markets. They did a very flat share. As in, you know, it hit a lot of people. They didn't get a huge amount per unit, but it dominated, and then VHS eventually became the winning system. Now, it's too easy to compare the operating systems in smartphones nowadays to the video systems for start. There's more than the two platforms. There's more than the incumbents, and there's more factors in play in services and software and hardware, as opposed to just can you rent Flash Gordon or not. But at the same time, Nokia's approach is different to Apple. Google's approach is just to get as much advertising as possible on as many devices as possible. And I think people are going, well, they're wrong for that strategy, but forgetting that Nokia are doing a different strategy.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, and we certainly touched on that before when we've described sort of the platform or the everything approach, which I think you'd put Nokia and Android into, and then the more boutique approach, which, you know, iPhone to a certain extent, RIM and Windows Phone 7 follow. And there is that very much a split between the strategy. It does need to be understood. I would like to make a point, you know, with all of what we've been saying, is there is an issue here between the split on Symbian 3 and Symbian 1 device that Nokia faces, albeit with, you know, Qt as a common back end. The Qt experience on the Symbian 1 devices isn't as good. Some of them in particular, something like the original N97 with the small C drive, are going to find it very difficult to run Qt applications, mainly because of the size of the Qt libraries that have to be installed. And that is a serious issue. I suspect it's probably possible to overemphasize this because the number of people looking to install this on the older devices is quite small, but it's a bigger issue for something like the C503, but that's fortunate because they've obviously changed the size of the C disk on some of the more recent Symbian 1 models, and I'm sure that's very much a deliberate effort. But even that, you have to appreciate they have less power. But I think it's, you know, easy to criticize Nokia for this and say you need to, you know, stop the fractioning of something like Symbian and not have Symbian 1, have everything on Symbian 3. But as things stand, that isn't possible. And so Nokia does have to work with what it is and provide its product portfolio from within its sort of current range of software. If we're looking to the future, certainly all the indicators suggest that Nokia is very keen to try and get all their Symbian devices running on the same platform. So I think, you know, that will be Symbian 3 and it will go down the market in time. But due to the requirements, and that's really in terms of having the additional graphics co-processor, that will just take a little while. I mean, I suspect we'll start to see this towards the end of this year and into 2012. So I think an awareness should be flagged up about this Symbian 1 versus Symbian 3 fragmentation is a problem. And you can see a similar thing with, obviously, S63rd edition, although that's a specific device niche which is perhaps a little different. So for all of anything, it doesn't matter. I think there needs to be an awareness of that, but those who would criticize Nokia for this, I think they're already aware of that and are taking the steps to address it, but have to create the products in the context of where the strategy is right now rather than where they would like it to be. So interesting device, and I look forward to you reading more on Ewan's thoughts on it in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. You mentioned several times there, guys, the Nokia's quarter four results 2010, which are now in. We put a story up on the site yesterday as we record this on the Friday. And as I speak, it's got over 320 comments. So it's masses of people wanted to say masses on this. Just to break a few of the key points down, doubtless Rafe will comment on the actual financials. The standout figures to me were the fact that smartphone shipments, that's Nokia Symbian smartphones mainly, 28.3 million in the quarter, up from 26 million in quarter three. And a year ago, they sold 20 million. So a pretty healthy ramp up, you'd think. And on balance, considering the marketplace with Android really going for it and Android absolutely accelerating during 2010, it's not surprising that the actual market share has gone down by 5 or 6 points. And a lot of people have picked up on that and said Nokia's in decline, Nokia's doomed. And no doubt they have some pretty decent challenges, which again, Rafe will probably come to in a moment. But given the current financial climate, given Android's absolute explosion, it's still behind Symbian, but it is exploding, then actually, you know, a 7% quarter-on-quarter increase in sales, selling 28.3 million smartphones, still more than any other operating system, still more than any other manufacturer by far. I mean, these results, I would class them as okay. Let's hope Steve Nielop's got some more aces up his sleeve and can get the acceleration going again. Rafe, do you want to start us off, and then no doubt we can interrupt?
Yes, I mean, just to talk about some of the financials, there was an operating profit of 884 million euros. That's actually down 23% year on year, but isn't an entirely bad figure given some of the results Nokia have had recently. And that was significantly ahead of sort of analyst and market expectations, who were predicting anything from about 300 up to about 600 million. I think the average was about 550 or so. You know, a similar thing happened with the sort of the net sales. They were 12.65 billion. I think where a lot of the concern came from was the device shipments themselves. So that's overall device sales for Nokia. That's 123.7 million, which were lower than estimated. And as far as I'm aware, it's one of the first times that comparing year on year device sales have actually gone down, albeit by a relatively small amount. But I think it's reflective of that, you know, smartphone explosion that we've talked about. And while, as you say, Nokia is growing in smartphones, it's not growing at the same pace as the rest of the market. You know, that said, you also have to bear in mind that the iPhone, you know, which is obviously held up as being, you know, in one sense, the preeminent smartphone by the media, its market share also went down this quarter, and a similar thing happened to RIM. RIM, I think, decreased by about the same amount as Nokia. Have to check the figures to be exact, and whereas Apple was down a couple of percentage points. Clearly, Nokia has more to lose given that it was at a bigger market share originally. And I don't think anyone should underestimate that this is bad news for Nokia, but relatively speaking, with the huge growth of Android, comparing that piecemeal, it's tricky. And I suspect people are going to go, well, if it went down 6% this quarter, it'll go down another 6% this quarter. Well, I don't think that'll happen, and a lot of that's to do with the fact that the growth rate of Android has slowed down significantly. I think the other thing that was sort of bad news from these results was talking about the forecast for Q1 or the outlook, and the problem there was the device margins were significantly down, having been up at around the sort of 10 to 12 euro mark in Q4, which was essentially in line with expectations. Nokia is now saying that for Q1 it's going to be, it's percentage, not euros, between 7 and 10%. That's sort of a couple of percentage points below expectations, and that's why you've seen a sort of a share price drop. Why is this happening? Well, it's not really to do with operator expenditure. I think a lot of this is to do with probably sales perhaps being slightly lower than predicted in a competitive climate, but we'll have to see what happens. In terms of looking further ahead, Nokia weren't going to comment on that, because on February 11th they have a financial sort of analyst event coming up where Stephen Elop is going to unveil his new strategy, and I think we'll come to that in a minute, because that's really what generated an awful lot of the comments on the site. But just sticking with Q4 for just a little bit longer, I think there were some bright rays of sunshine in amongst what people have been reading is fairly negative. And as I say, I think reading too much negativity in this is probably a little unfair, because really they're pretty much in line with expectations. But the sort of from a positive point of view, there were 5 million Symbian 3 devices sold in Q4. And I think that's a pretty good result. Nokia said that they were not able to make as many N8s as they wanted to in terms of the demand. They couldn't meet the supply. And I think as a rough estimate, we can probably guess that the N8 was probably in the region of maybe 4 million units, with the remaining ones taken up for the most part by the C7, with the C601 really only starting to ship in the last week or two of the quarter. The other sort of positive momentum was the Ovi Store, which is now up to 4 million downloads a day. That's up from about 2.75 million in October. So that's a very big increase over a three-month period. Cumulative downloads just approaching the 1 billion mark. I expect we'll hear an announcement on that within the next month or so. Now, that is still behind the other app stores, but the momentum is certainly going in the right direction there. And particularly positive news, I think, was that in the last 10 weeks, 15% of the downloads were coming from Symbian 3 devices. If you run through the arithmetic of that, that would suggest there's 7 or 8 apps being downloaded to every Symbian 3 device, which I think it does suggest that some of the problem with the Ovi Store client they've had on the earlier devices and persuading people to download apps and lack of apps is starting to go away. There's obviously still room for improvement. Similarly, Ovi Maps is continuing to expand its countries that it covers. And again, with the N8, they notice it's among their most active users, up to 4 hours per month using Maps and Navigate, which is quite an interesting statistic, because that's actually above the average number of minutes that get called on phones. Now, obviously, it's that's for phones as a whole, not smartphones, which has a slightly different pattern, but it does speak quite loudly to the fact that smartphones are for a diverse range of activities. And I think Ovi Maps is probably one of the jewels in Nokia's service crown. And just as a final bit of information before I let Ewan and David have their say, is it wasn't talked about very loudly, but this is actually the first year, or rather 2010 was the first year, in which more than 100 million Symbian devices were shipped from a single manufacturer, and that's Nokia. And indeed, that's the first time it's happened for any smartphone platform or any company. So I think that's quite a significant industry milestone, 100 million devices in a year. It's a nice number to talk about. And really is a good sign of the smartphone really coming of age.
Part of me just went, just a week or two of sales in the C601, and it's like, oh, you mean this is like how early was mine then? You still weren't getting it. It's a lovely little device. And I think the two things I wanted to draw attention to this. The first one is the whole, past performance is not a guide to future trends. You can see, curves coming up, but the focus on market share of how it's dropping, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be the market share next quarter or the next quarter or the next quarter. everything zeros. Yes, there are the stuff in place, contracts with network providers, handsets already being pre-sold, you know, the market that are out there. But market, you know, the fact is Nokia are sustaining that market share to a cent. Okay, yeah, plus or minus the percentage, but there are more devices being sold. They're still making more money than they were if they had retained the volume of raw numbers from previous years. Finally, none of this is Stephen Ellop's, I think. All of this, you know, he only came in on board in September. You know, so he's had to run with whatever OPK had left over. Whatever decisions he'd been made for the Christmas market had already been made for him. His first time to peel out any ace up his sleeve is going to be this call on February the 11th. Right now, he's just had to work with what he's got. So I think quite a few people are going to be looking at this and going, what's Ellop managed? So it says, well, in reality, he's not been able to manage anything yet. We've not seen what Ellop can do. We've had murmurings of one or two decisions, but these results are OPK's results, and OPK was asked to leave.
Absolutely, and I think it's also worth pointing out here, you know, people said this is the first quarter with Symbian 3 devices. That's absolutely true, but I don't think the full impact of those would have been felt. As people know, the C7 only went in sale in November, the C601 in December, and there's obviously more Symbian 3 devices to come. Not to mention that sales actually tend to ramp up several months after a device first starts shipping into the market. So we'll see a bigger impact from Symbian 3 in subsequent quarters. I mean, it did have an impact, you know, 5 million units is a good result, probably ahead of what people were expecting. And it's the reason that the average selling price has gone up. But a lot of these results are very much based on strategy. And as you say, what OPK was doing from sort of, you know, three to 6 months ago is people tend to think about the timelines. You know, the majority of these device sales probably came from the 5230 and its variants, and we're living in a slightly different time. That said, I think the strategy is going to be very interesting. I'm sure Steve's now going to introduce that, given that that, as I say, provoked most of the discussion in the comments.
Yeah, before I do that, before I do that, Rafe, just a throwaway comment here. The N8 basically is often being sold on the strength of its camera. I mean, 12 megapixel Xenon flash, and just about any geek out there, they want the N8 because of the camera. And in that sense, it's very much a follow-up to things like the N82, N93, N86. I'd be very interested to look at the sales of any of those camera-centric devices, and I bet they're not even a fraction of the number of sales the N8 has managed to garner so far. So given the N8's somewhat specialist nature, I think for 4 million sales in quarter four 2010 is actually not bad at all. Let's move on to strategy, though. Stephen Ellop, in the conference call that accompanied the press release and the whole hoo-ha yesterday, he dropped what some people have quoted as a grenade. He was talking about ecosystems, and this is his exact quote. He said that he was talking about success begins and ends with great products. He said we had to compete on an ecosystem to ecosystem basis, and the quote is, Nokia must build, catalyze, or join a competitive ecosystem. Now, I'm not entirely sure what that means. A part of me thinks he's just talking it as in marketing speak, and it could mean anything. Rafe, do you have a specific interpretation of the word competitive there and join?
Yes, Steve. I was listening to that part of the conference call, and it immediately sort of raised eyebrows. I knew that that was going to provoke a lot of discussion. When I was listening to it at the time, I thought, you know, this is Stephen Ellop listing his options, which are, you know, build an ecosystem, effectively what Nokia is doing now, but with the proviso that he's going to come up with a way to improve execution, or, you know, build that properly, continuing what's being done, then, you know, catalyze the ecosystem. That tends to be pulling in outsiders, and I think that's perhaps where Nokia, we might see some announcement there, you know, with partners and things like that. And then clearly the one that provoked the most comment was join a competitive ecosystem, and I think to people that suggested, you know, Nokia Android devices, Nokia Windows Phone 7 devices. I suppose you could add in WebOS to the mix as well. But I think presumably Android and Windows Phone 7 are the main candidates that people are thinking of here. As I say, it sounded to me more like an option list with not wanting to commit to anything in particular, because discussions are still, and, you know, decisions are still ongoing before this February 11th strategy unveiling. However, you can, you know, to be balanced about this, you can equally argue that he wouldn't have said something like that unless he was sort of training or preparing the markets for a bigger announcement. I think that's, you know, dangerous territory to get into, because equally you can looking to some of the other things he said, he actually gave it, you know, five or six, you know, base criteria for what the strategy going forward would be based off. And this is things like, you know, being able to embrace our strong hardware innovation and product tasting capabilities that allow us to differentiate across the market. So, you know, from low to high end. So, for example, for something like Windows Phone 7, that would be a problem given the relatively tight constraints that Microsoft put on device manufacturers in terms of chassis specifications. And then it's sort of, he wants to advance great software and service assets. And obviously that things like Ovi Store and Ovi Maps. Again, that's a problem on perhaps on Windows Phone 7. You can make an argument that Qt could be ported to Android. And again, that's a possibility. But there are some inherent problems there, which I guess we might discuss later. But I think, to my mind, the one that was perhaps most interesting was... he said it was critical for Nokia to be able to maintain the ability to differentiate in an ecosystem. And he was talking about both within the ecosystem itself, but externally to other ecosystems. And that's where I think perhaps the, you know, the biggest, you know, thing comes from. Nokia wishes to control their own destiny. They're certainly big enough to do so. And that essentially means controlling their own ecosystem. It does, I think, leave some wiggle room for perhaps, you know, specific platform introductions for market. You know, people have talked about Windows Phone 7 for the US, which I think is a possibility. You have to go away and think about this some more, but I actually don't think that's, you know, a particularly likely option, but I'd rate it as a possibility. In terms of my opinion, what I think it's, you know, it's going to be full steam ahead with Symbian Amigo, but we'll probably be hearing at Capital Markets Day, you know, about how Elon intends to improve execution, and it will be the accelerative effect of Qt will be the slogan as far as I'm concerned. You know, maybe an outside tip, wouldn't be surprised if Migo perhaps gets, you know, delayed, whether it's emphatically called a delay or not, just to give them some extra time to work on the UI and things like that. Because one of the things he said right at the end, you know, is it time to market or quality important? That was a question he answered, quality, and that, you know, time to market mattered less because once you came out with the device, you know, you, there was no going back and you could create permanent long-term damage. I think we saw that with something like the N97, and Nokia can ill afford to do that again. So I suspect, you know, Migo will continue to be very important, but they'll want to get it right first time, so it might mean a delay. It'll be interesting to see the reaction to that, and of course, this is all speculation. We'll actually only know on February the 11th, but I'm sure that both David and Ewan have some thoughts and some inputs into this. So, you know, Ewan, what were your thoughts on reading all of this?
Well, I think the first thing to stress was in the call, Elop stressed himself, we're talking about Q4 and those results and looking back at 2010. So the majority of this call was addressing previous and current. It wasn't really addressing future. Nokia reiterated with all of their filings that their main planks are hardware, software, services, and their integration. You know, we've been over the arguments before. If you move to Android, you know, you pretty much have to go with Google, which means you lose a third of what makes you a company. That's a big sacrifice, and that's the sort of sacrifice I don't think the markets would take. There's an argument, theoretically, that you get Android, you don't put anything of Google on it, and you run Ovi services instead of Google services. Now, from a technical point of view, that could probably just about work, but it would be a huge kludge, and it would be very hard to market, and it would be very poor to message out. You know, if I think there's something radical, if you're looking at another ecosystem, why not Amazon? Amazon have a music store. They're already looking at an application store to run alongside on Android, so why can't they do on the Symbian as well? It could be something as radical as that. Or it could be something as simple that we've all missed. There's already been a platform change announced by Elop. There's already been a change to the ecosystem, which was, we're not doing Symbian 4. We're going to create Symbian 3 as a rolling ecosystem going forward. So we might have already seen that ecosystem change. At the same time, we might see tweaks on Migo. Theoretically, you could say that maybe he's looked at Migo and went, you know what, we're never going to get the quality in here. We're going to put something else in at the high end and maybe go with Ubuntu Mobile or one of those variants. So there's a couple of interesting decisions that could be there. But I think, you know, the immediate jump to he's going to announce something brand new in February is wrong. I think he's looking backwards, and I think it's more likely that we'll have something sideways. Elop's come in with a vision, and it's going to be a vision that is completely, you know, that is going to be radically different to what was offered possibly by Ansi Van Jocke. So I don't think his vision as a Microsoft man would be, let's use that thing from Google and give Google all the money. and you know, coming from Microsoft with so many, who made a profit in his division at Microsoft under the Office stuff, you know, he knows the ins and outs and the Windows Phone market. So I'm not quite sure that, you know, that's the be-all and end-all answer as well. I think what we're going to see on February 11th is going to be surprising, but I don't think it's going to be much more than a 10 or 20 degree turn. It's not going to be a radical handbrake.
Yeah. David, you were very quiet yesterday in terms of the comments, and you've been fairly quiet now. So can I turn to you for your what stood out for you yesterday, what your overriding impression of the results and the strategy was?
Yeah, I've been pondering all this quietly. And I mean, just to pick up on what Ewan was saying about having an Ovi-ized Android system, I don't think that's going to work, because I think people have a set an expectation of what Android is, and having an Android running Ovi, I don't think people will get it. I don't think they'll understand it or buy it. I think really, I mean, the reaction to this, I mean, it was expected, but I think there's been a certain amount of hysteria, everyone trying to pick up on every little word that Stephen Elop had to say. But really, I think, as Rafe said, it is going to be full steam ahead with Symbian Amiga, because they've invested so heavily into Qt. Symbian Amiga are pretty much coming along as a package deal now.
I mean, you could have Qt being announced, you could announce an Android version of Qt and say, you know, if people want to put Qt on their Android devices, they can, and just leave it at that. That's a new ecosystem. That's catalyzing an ecosystem, isn't it?
I mean, there is already a project to port Qt to Android, but we very deliberately in this podcast, you know, tried to consider some of the options, and we'll probably put some material up on the site about this more generally. So say my opinion on this is very much that it will be explaining about how the execution is going to be improved, because essentially what Capital Markets Day is about is convincing the market, and that's shareholders and analysts, that the strategy is going to work. And I feel quite strongly that the strategy of Symbian 3 and the continued upgrade path, with Qt effectively being the unifying platform to MeeGo, and then obviously MeeGo as the high-end platform for both, you know, very high-end devices and some mobile computing like devices, hasn't really had a chance to, you know, to flourish. But, you know, while the ideas behind it are right, it's been moving more slowly than it should have been, and so I think a lot of the emphasis will be on how can we make this go fast. As I say, we have tried to consider some of the options in this podcast, and you know, there's, as Ewan says, there's a good possibility that something else, you know, comes out. But fundamentally, a big shift that, you know, people talk about with a platform change, I think they massively underestimate the costs and the risks involved. And quite apart from, you know, is it a good business strategy for Nokia to follow? And ultimately, that's what it comes down to for me, is Nokia, being the size it is, you know, it's not about it needs to switch to a platform to survive. It needs to, if it wants to, you know, continue as a dominant company in mobile, it needs to work out how it can achieve that on its own rather than necessarily going elsewhere. But as I say, I'm sure this debate is going to run. But, you know, please do, you know, put your own comments in. And as I say, we'll be listening very carefully on February the 11th. But if you're looking for a personal prediction from me, at least, as I say, emphasize again, it's Symbian and MeeGo with full steam ahead, with a sort of emphasis on Qt as an accelerative agent, perhaps with the possibility that, you know, another platform comes in to address a specific platform need, although I have to say I think that's perhaps less likely.
Yeah, going back to the options, I mean, I think another thing people were talking about was Windows Phone 7, and I think that is just an idea that doesn't have any legs at all. Windows Phone 7 is still in its infancy itself. It is untested. And looking back historically, Palm moved to Windows Mobile, and it didn't really work out too well for them. So I think if Nokia did do that, it's just sending the wrong message. When Stephen Elop said about they need to be more competitive and change faster, if I was going to put any interpretation on that at all, it would be in line with one of my main criticisms of Nokia, is that they're just too slow to get things to market. That we get talk about when the N8 was coming out, or when the next MeeGo device is coming out, and we end up talking about it for so long, I think people end up being bored of hearing about the thing by the time it gets to market. So I think they need to invest heavily on rapid development. I mean, yes, they need to keep the quality control in because they've learned that's the N97 lesson, but they need to get things out faster. And the other interpretation from the results is that, yes, Nokia has had a dip in profits and it has lost a little bit of market share. But when you think about how much they've lost in market share compared to how big the market is growing, it's actually quite trivial.
Yeah. A couple of thoughts here. We're talking about the rapid product development cycles, and it is possible if you try and develop something too fast and bring it to market too fast, you can introduce all sorts of problems that should have been caught. Now, obviously, people will point back to things like the early N97 firmwares and various other firmwares as examples of Nokia getting things too fast and getting it wrong. But just another example from the Android world, the Nexus S, which has been the darling of the American tech press, the latest Google branded phone, if you like. And there've been that there's this SMS bug which they've only just fixed, where you send it, random messages appear from you to other people. There's a random reboot bug where it just reboots itself completely randomly, and they're still working on that. So there are big issues in terms of taking your time and getting it right. And Stephen Elop did say in the conference call, this is another quote from him, he said, quality, we must release great products. If products disappoint, we can do long-term damage to the brand. And it's also worth pointing out that going back to the original quote that started this discussion off, Stephen Elop said, Nokia must build, catalyze, or join a competitive ecosystem. That was three different options with a whacking great grammatical or in the middle, implying that they could go any one of three ways. So it's way too early, and we'll find out more, of course, on February the 11th. Rafe, you had a final thought?
Absolutely. Just to emphasise what you said, it depends on language how you interpret this, but ultimately you need to look at it in a fairly dispassionate way, and it's about building a sustainable business that makes money, and you have to ask yourself, what is the best way for Nokia to do that? And, you know, the options of joining things like Android or to Windows Phone 7 require Nokia to sacrifice a portion of their profits to another company. Now, you can argue about how big or small that's going to be, but undoubtedly doing that does mean that they are less in control of their own destiny. Now, you then ask, would that be worth the benefits of doing so? Are there any benefits of doing so? And I think a fairly emphatic answer comes back from that is no. Nokia can do it themselves. The question is, you know, how do you execute that themselves, and how, can you convince the market you're able to do that? And that, I think, is the question that Stephen Elop will need to address at Capital Markets Day. So, as Steve says, wait until February 11th. We'll be covering it, of course, in full on the podcast, and on the day we'll have live coverage going on. So keep an eye on the site with more details for that.
I don't think Nokia is in business to make money. I think you've got it all wrong, Rafe. Nokia are in business, as are all the other phone manufacturers, to make shiny toys to enhance my life. That's my
view. No. They're all in business to make shiny toys and hold just out of reach of Steve's life. E7.
Yeah. We're right out of time, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for contributing. Rafe Blandford.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye from David.
Thanks. Bye.
And up in Scotland.
Goodbye. Oh, DHL's right here. Ooh, C5.
Oh, go get. Thank you for listening. I've been Steve Litchfield. Catch us on allaboutsymbian.com, where there will be some show notes. Bye for now.